Olive leaf extract is an extraordinary source of the beneficial polyphenols found in olive oil and in olive plants. And now you can get all the benefits from a supplement, olive leaf extract, available through drhoffman.com. Olive leaf extract, one of my favorite supplements. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's theme is exercise, but a very specific type of exercise. You know, it's risky to do a podcast on the subject of exercise because it's kind of an experiential thing. But this is, I think, an important theme for us to consider because there's a new exercise craze that is sweeping the country, and now there is a great book about it. So in an effort to inform you and perhaps inspire you to get a little bit out of your comfort zone, we're going to talk about the CrossFit phenomenon. CrossFit is something which is literally taking the country by storm. Here in New York City, there are scores and scores of CrossFit studios. A lot of Gen Xers and millennials are enamored of CrossFit. And it's controversial because some people say, no, CrossFit is dangerous, potentially harmful. It's not a good way to exercise. And so we're going to drill down and examine the subject in depth with today's guest, J.C. Hertz. J.C. has written a book entitled Learning to Breathe Fire. It just came out this week. And J.C. is eminently qualified to talk about this because she doesn't just talk the talk. She walks the talk. She is an avid CrossFitter. She is also an investigative journalist, someone who has written for the New York Times, and she's written several other books. And now she brings her insights to the subject of CrossFit. So without further ado, here's J.C. Hertz. J.C., it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the origins of this, because you kind of get into the history and the culture of CrossFit. And actually, this is a fairly recent phenomenon, because I think if you go back, I don't know, maybe even just 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago, nobody knew from CrossFit, right?
Well, nobody knew about it, but
in fact, it was happening. Yeah, it was happening.
Right? It was this little fringe movement that was happening in these converted auto body workshops, right, in these industrial parks, in the underground, this kind of pirate movement of fitness. And part of the narrative of learning to breathe fire is the emergence of CrossFit from this underground movement to something which, of course, now is exploding. Right, and the question is, well, why is it exploding? Why is it suddenly so popular? And one of the things I've always written about with regard to popular culture, these phenomena that just explode, always tap into something that we want and need on a primal level and feel that we're missing. So part of this was going into the ancient prehistory of sport and how sport emerges in human society, because it's not obvious that a bunch of primates should run out onto a field, set rules, and gratuitously expend calories when food is scarce, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we do it. We did it, and we do it, and it's part of what keeps a lot of cultures together. And what CrossFit has managed to do is to tap back into some of the rituals that, if you look back into the paleoanthropology, first gave rise to sport, when we're talking about, you know, 20, 30,000 years ago. And that's one of the reasons it's so powerful, and what's so interesting and what makes it beyond, you know, kind of fitness and exercise, because there's 1,000 books about those, is just looking at the human condition and understanding where we came from and how this, you know, intense group of people has sort of accidentally tapped into something that's very caveman and cavewoman, and the tribal bonding that goes on around that, and sort of seeing how those stories play out.
Well, before we get into the paleo linkages of CrossFit, which I think is fascinating in and of itself, that's a frequent theme here on Intelligent Medicine. We talk about the paleo diet, and we talk about paleo exercise, which is very different than, running marathons or getting up on the elliptical. That's not the way they did it in man's early evolution. But before we get into the notion of paleo exercise, provide us with a definition. What is CrossFit like for those who have little familiarity with it?
So CrossFit has this very formal definition, which is constantly varied functional movement executed at high intensity, right? That's the sort of CrossFit catechism. And what it really means is that it's never the same thing from day to day, and that every movement is functional. You're not moving a limb up in one direction on a muscle isolation machine. You're doing the kind of movements that we really need in life to get heavy things around or get ourselves around. They're complex movements, which are more demanding physically, right, to do a lunge or to do a push-up or a pull-up, but they're actually more demanding also neurologically in your brain to fire the circuitry that actually makes that complex movement happen, right? So it's not just the body, but also the brain.
Well, let's compare and contrast, because a typical exercise ritual, I work out at the Y, and as I'm on my way to the pool, or as I'm on my way to work out with my personal trainer, I pass an entire room of people who are working out on the elliptical machine. The elliptical machine is, sort of a variation on the stair climber or the stair stepper. And these individuals may be reading the New York Times or watching CNN. And they do this, 40 minutes at a time. They get a workout, and then they, towel off, jump in the shower, and head off to work.
You got to do some crunches.
You got to
after you do the cardio machine.
Right, you should. But some people.
It's interesting though, because the history of the modern gym.
Yeah.
Is one of the things that I go into in the book, and what CrossFitters derisively call the Globo Gym, right, from the movie Dodgeball, and how did this become the dominant form of fitness? So it's a little bit like what Michael Pollan does in the Omnivore's Dilemma, where he looks at industrial food.
Uh-huh.
Right. So how did
Yeah, how do we get to use machines? I mean, we tend to accept
right.
them, that we're going to use the machines help us do our exercise better in some way, rather than, the usual things that people do in
yes.
daily activities, such as, whatever, walking, climbing, lifting boulders. We tend to use the machines to prevent us from having injuries, perhaps, or to guide our exercise, right?
Actually,
that's the
make
theory,
it more
anyway.
Comfortable.
Yes.
To make it more comfortable. So, one of the things that was actually horrifying to discover, this was my sort of Soylent Green moment in my research, was that the Precor elliptical was marketed to gyms that it removes the discomfort of exercise. Your members will love it. Right? So there's this whole notion that it should be something that you can comfortably do while paging through a tabloid magazine. I mean, I think maybe you give gym members too credit by saying that they read the New York Times. What I see a lot is, Star and Us magazine. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Uh-huh.
But it's the idea that exercise should be comfortable. But in the process, it also becomes boring, repetitive, mindless, and worst of all, it becomes soulless. And if you don't work out at one of these gyms and you go into one and you see row upon row of people alone together with their iPods on, it's like bowling alone on the elliptical. And
uh-huh.
that's part of what's wrong, is that we're socially alienated while we do these things that have been drained of their intensity and drained of their social interaction.
Right. Well, it is very much something where you don't have to talk to a single individual when you go to the gym. It's very much a solitary activity. It's not a social activity, although you are surrounded by like-minded individuals, so there's some community there. But there's also this notion that the movements are repetitive. They're stereotypical. They work one very specific muscle group in a guided fashion, you know, when you work with a Nautilus machine. And that is thought to be, you know, good, you know, muscle isolation, this notion that we're going to just work on one muscle group and then we'll move on to the next machine, we'll work on the next muscle machine.
It's interesting, though, because in the real world, moving things requires complex movement. So, and that's not just because of your strength, right? The isolation machine will train your muscle to exert itself. But in order to actually move a heavy object in the real world, you need to be coordinated. You need to move a heavy thing close to the center of your body to get it up over your head, for instance. Mm-hmm. And if you only train on those isolation machines, you're almost unhooking your brain. So if you really have to get a heavy thing up over your head, you have to move a tree branch or you have to, you know, get a suitcase full of books into the overhead luggage compartment, not only are you out of luck because your brain doesn't actually know how to do it, but you're likely to be injured because you coordinate force to propel something in a direction. And in fact, one of the most common rotator cuff injuries is, in fact, that movement of the suitcase full of reading material up and overhead into the overhead luggage compartment, and there's not enough stability there, and then something happens to the rotator cuff. So part of, and incidentally, that movement is, people say, well, why would I need to learn how to do an Olympic lift? I mean, that's some arcane exotic thing.
Well, that's actually referred to sometimes a clean and jerk. Yeah, for some people that sounds like a weird jock expression, you know, a clean and jerk. But maybe you can explain what that motion entails.
Well, a clean and jerk is exactly the movement you use to put a piece of luggage in the overhead compartment. You take a thing off the ground, you lift it to your shoulders, and then you put it over your head.
Mm-hmm.
So people, I say, well, you do a clean and jerk almost every time you get on a plane. You're just not doing it with any particular degree of skill.
And this is done with for those who want to visualize this, when you look at Olympic weight competition, you see these, you know, Bulgarian weightlifters, you know, who weigh 300 pounds, lifting enormous barbells over their heads that may weigh like 1,000 pounds. And they grunt and they groan, they lift it up to chest height, and then all of a sudden, in a graceful movement, they lift it over their heads. Is that about right?
They lift it over their heads, but what they're really doing is actually jumping themselves under the bar, right? So they lower themselves slightly. And this is about efficiency, right? Because it's a lot easier to move the bar up a little bit than it is to move it a lot. And that's part of the art and the charm of learning some of these barbell movements, is that you learn how to make your human machine, your body, into this efficient mechanism that can get things from one place to another. And that's really exciting, and particularly for women, because most of their fitness activity has never involved the expression of physical power.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see women get in there and say, oh no, I don't want to bulk up, but then all of a sudden that lady lifts a weight above her head and she has this almost victory moment of, wow, I can do this. And it instills a lot of physical confidence, which spills over into other areas of your life. And it's one of the themes in the book is these women, some of whom, you know, start out, you know, 200 pounds, other of whom are former athletes. And they find their kind of inner fierceness in training, and it transforms the whole rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly this is very appealing. Also, the notion is that instead of like a monotonous routine, you know, like I get on the Stairmaster, I do 40 minutes every day, same muscles, same routine. It's got to be constantly varied. There's a nice glossary in your book at the end of the book, and it includes the term WOD, W-O-D, which is workout of the day. And that's going to be, every day is going to be different, right? It has to be different.
Yep, a new form of torture every day. And the glossary is fun for me to write because there's some, you know, technical terms. There's Olympic lifting and there's CrossFit jargon like WOD or as many reps as possible, right? The AMRAP. But then I also found myself forced to define terms like booty shorts.
Okay. What are booty shorts?
Booty shorts, they're garments which blur the line between athletic tights and swimwear,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, for a lot of reasons, you know, you get very hot when you do CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
Your body's generating a lot of heat. So, you know, people generally, you know, the women wear short tights, and, mm-hmm. you know, the men all too often take their shirts off. And it's funny because in an aerobics class, right, this would be sort of a leering and ogling environment, but everyone is just so focused on getting themselves through the ordeal
mm-hmm.
that it's not a very sexualized environment, even though all these women are running around in, you know, what amounts to swimwear.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like, you know, a fun environment to be in. You know, actually, this has spawned a whole generation of new types of athletic wear, is the minimalistic footwear, mm-hmm. you know, specialized CrossFit training outfits. It's become a real cottage industry that is revolutionizing sports.
Well, and it's all based on function, right? It's in keeping with this whole thing about function versus the cosmetic, right? If you go back into previous fitness movements, it's all about the appearance, the color, and the spandex.
Mm-hmm.
And if
the knee socks, the matching coordinated knee socks, and white sneakers,
and want and need, right? They don't wear knee socks for cosmetic reasons. They wear knee socks because when you do a deadlift and you're keeping that bar really close to your legs,
mm-hmm.
if you're not careful, you can shave your legs with the bar.
Ooh, okay.
And you don't want to come out of a workout looking like you just had an encounter with a weed whacker.
Mm-hmm.
And then the t-shirts, CrossFitters are t-shirt snobs, right? It has to be wicking, right? It has to be like anything to remove heat and sweat.
Right.
And it's all, they get into the geeky aspects of textiles in terms of, like, you know, which polyester blend is going to do the best.
Most heat conducting fabric.
Yes,
that, you know.
Absolutely. It's a very odd combination of being super athletic and super geeky.
Uh-huh. Well, certainly, you know, we see the results of this because it gives you, you know, not a muscle-bound look, but sort of a long, sinewy, slender look. I mean, the aesthetics of it, I think, are very pleasing. You know, you alluded earlier, so, you know, the different exercise styles that appeal to different generations. I think the baby boomer generation was all about, oh, this new amazing feat, the marathon. Let's train for the marathon. Let's complete. And for me, that was sort of a rite of passage as I did my first marathon, actually, at about 35, is this tremendous accomplishment. But it was all about, you know, I'd strap on my sneakers in the morning, no stretching, no strengthening, no strength training. I had, chicken chest muscles, but I had awesome legs and amazing aerobic power. And I was very single mindedly running. I guess you could call me a running fool. And, you know, that's all I did. And it's sort of an unbalanced form of exercise. Why do you think the millennials are, I mean, there are certainly millennials who are marathoners and triathletes, but why do you think this type of athleticism appeals to that generation?
Well, the thing about CrossFit, and not just CrossFit, but also things like mud runs, right? And there's a big nexus.
The Spartan run and so on, yeah.
Yeah, Spartan, you know, the Spartan Dash and the Tough Mudder and the Muddy Buddy and all of them. And a lot of those are CrossFitters, right? If you ask a Muddy Buddy, if you drag them out of their mud and ask them what they do for fitness, they'll say CrossFit. And then you mm-hmm. walk into the CrossFit gym, and there's a postcard for the Tough Mudder, right? So this is
it's like a human steeplechase, like obstacle course. One of my employees just went through it, and it's, you know, she did like a lot of wall climbs and jumping over obstacles, even over jumping over a burning pit, but also a rope climb and you know, a log carry, and it emphasized a lot of upper body strength, not just aerobic endurance.
Well, and also, and this is also a strong theme in the book, is the power of storytelling. And one of the things that marathons don't make for is great stories, because putting one foot in front of the other until you hit the wall and get through it, it's just not very dramatic. It doesn't have a lot of variation. Whereas if you go into an adventure race or a mud run or even a CrossFit workout or a CrossFit competition, one of the things these all have in common is they make for these personal stories and group stories. And that's very different in terms of, you know, Gen X and millennials. I mean, Tough Mudders, they aren't even timed. If you took a clock away from a marathon, it would make people's heads explode
mm-hmm.
to not have a time.
It's like, whereas, yeah, I shaved like, you know, a minute off my marathon time. Like, that's huge. You know?
Right, but the whole point about the CrossFit and the Tough Mudders is that you have this group of people and you stick with your buddies and you get through it, and then you have a story to tell and a whole bunch of, you know, sweaty, muddy pictures mm-hmm. to post onto your social media. So it's really more about bonding, and it's more about that rite of passage mm. of we went into this experience and we got through it, and now, you know, we have a different kind of status and we have a stronger friendship.
Well, that's interesting. Maybe that's it also speaks a little bit to the social style that's generational. You know, I think in my generation, it was a lot about individual striving, individual attainment, solo virtuoso performance. And I think the newer generation embraces a more communal style, a more cooperative style. You know, certainly, you know, you see that embodied in, you know, the popular culture shows like The Office. You know, it's a group effort to get things done.
Well, and it's also, it's an interesting balance. I would say rather than communal, it is communal, but it's also tribal. It's that I have my pack that I belong with. And people are very competitive within at the same time as they're supportive of each other. So you want the people that you're racing against to go as fast as they can. Because it's almost like an ancient Greek, you know, it's a good day to die. You know, you want the best possible adversary. And it's very mythic. I mean, I make jokes all the time about the kind of game, you know, it's very Games of Thronesy, you know, in terms of what
yes.
people will name them. Like the CrossFit box I just talked to this morning was called CrossFit Unshackled. Like that was their name. And I had this funny moment when I was approaching a bunch of these CrossFit boxes to offer them copies of the book on Facebook, and I didn't know how to address them. You know, dear, you know, what should I use? And it turned out that the expression that really, really resonated was hail. So it was like, hail, CrossFit Unshackled. You know, I am the author of the forthcoming book, Learning to Breathe Fire. And there's this really funny kind of tribal, mythic, epic spirit that still knows how to make fun of itself within CrossFit that I find incredibly charming. And in the book, there's stories of people, you know, they're striking that pose out of the 300, and then they're just, you know, sort of cracking up and laughing at themselves.
Well, in fact, this is a type of exercise that has appealed to groups like Navy SEALs, firemen, law enforcement folks. In fact, where you first practiced CrossFit was among Secret Service men doing sort of off-duty training in the Washington, D.C. area, correct?
That's right. And those guys are beasts. I mean, they are beasts. But it was also new moms and real estate agents and orthodontists. So it was a kind of funny mix of what I call sort of white-collar, blue-collar, and camo-collar. So you have, you know, the military, the first responders, the firemen, policemen, and then you have the, you know, real estate agents and lawyers and Washington, D.C., the occasional lobbyist. And then you have, you know, people who are in constructions and the bartenders with tattoos all up their arms. And there's not very many places where those group of people mix and where their kids play together and have fun. And I think that's really important and rare, unfortunately. And it's just one of the things that you find in the CrossFit culture is this interesting mix, you know, different demographics and different socioeconomics and civilian and military as well.
Indeed. All right. So sounds exciting. You've laid the groundwork for our discussion of CrossFit. Let's stipulate this is part one of our interview with J.C. Herz, H-E-R-Z, no pun intended, right? Because CrossFit, it hurts a little bit, but yours is spelled H-E-R-Z. Learning to Breathe Fire, the Rise of CrossFit, and the Primal Future of Fitness. When we return in part two, we're going to talk about some of the details, what it is like, what some of the exercises involve, what its relationship is to the burgeoning paleo movement, paleo diet. What in the heck does that have to do with CrossFit? We'll find out in just a moment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.